Even before statehood, a lawyer named Ted Stevens was working to form Alaska's future, and he continued to do that for the rest of his life. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. We had earthquakes, wars, an oil spill, but Ted Stevens may have been the most powerful force shaping the state of Alaska in the last century. Our number statewide and toll-free is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, email talk@APRN.org, to talk about the role of Senator Ted Stevens in all our lives on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
Well, this was supposed to be an election show. Governor Sean Parnell was supposed to be here, but in view of the death of Senator Ted Stevens, he suspended all campaign activities. I believe Lisa Murkowski has done so as well. And so we're stuck with a talk show and trying to figure out what to do with it. And, well, the answer was natural. We'll talk about what everybody else is talking about, which is Ted Stevens. So I quickly marshaled some forces, and I have some absolute and complete experts for this program today, not to mention you. I think there are many Alaskans who would like to share their thoughts or their experiences or their perspectives on Ted Stevens, and you're encouraged to do so at 1-800-478-8255 or email at talk@APRN.org. And I've got basically two pretty different perspectives here, one from day-to-day close-up with Ted Stevens and one from the perspective of an historian who specializes in Alaska history. I think we'll start by introducing APRN's Joel Southern, who is now living in Denmark. And I say APRN's Joel Southern because APRN was a huge part of your broadcasting career. You founded our bureau in Washington, D.C., and ran it until recently. So you spanned how many years with Ted Stevens? 20?
Well, just about nearly. Yeah, just about 20. I started reporting on him on a daily basis, or a frequent basis at least, around the time of the in the aftermath of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. So I sat through most of the oversight hearings about Exxon Valdez and the Open 90 debate in the aftermath of the spill. And when I started working full-time for APRN in 1991, then he was absolutely a daily part of what I had to be conscious of reporting on.
Now, Joel, you were explaining in an earlier interview that there seemed to be a kind of evolution in Stevens as a public figure, in that he sort of gained a focus, I think is the way you put it, when he managed to get on the Appropriations Committee. Maybe you could talk about that a little.
Well, yeah, he'd been in the Senate for a long time at that point, and the Appropriations Committee, I think, was always his most cherished prize. He got on the Appropriations Committee very early. Of course, Bob Bartlett, and Steve Haycox, correct me if I'm wrong here, Bartlett was an appropriator, mm-hmm. and Stevens got that job eventually, but he sat on that committee for a long time, and he always cherished being chairman. And there did seem to be a period where he was in between that job and the things he'd done previously. You know, after he'd been in the leadership, where maybe he drifted a little bit, you know, maybe he was not quite as focused, but by golly, you know, when he became chairman of the Appropriations Committee, he was a really, really sharp guy. You'd be ill-advised to underestimate his ability to get what he wanted, to be very focused, to be very adamant in what he wanted to achieve. And those were heady days when he became chairman, because at the same time, around the same time, Frank Murkowski had been, and I think still was, the chairman of the Energy and Natural Resources Committee in the Senate. Don Young had chairmanships both of resources and then later transportation and infrastructure. So for this three-man delegation to get up to that point, but especially with Stevens in charge of the discretionary spending of the United States was a big time. I'll give you an example. I mean, whenever we would see prints of the appropriations bills, I mean, I literally did this. I would go and I'd earmark the pages that had the word Alaska or something I knew to be involved in Alaska in them, and you wouldn't believe the number of earmarks that were in those bills.
I would believe it, Joel, actually.
Yeah, I mean, the dog ears. I'm talking about not just the earmarks, but the earmarks is a term of art in the Congress, but the dog ears on the pages were quite numerous, too, and it was very, very heady times then. And, he loved being in that job. I think he was a little sorry. I mean, it was good also to go on and be chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee because of fisheries and aviation and all the other things, but he really, I think, most prized the Appropriations Committee chairmanship.
Well, now, if you can, put that right next to the budget crisis. There was a point where critical Alaska issues went front and center in national politics, and it was, in a way, a turning point in national politics. In that Tongass Forest and Anwar issues would show up in appropriations bills that would get enormous and then get vetoed, and the government would be without money. And it was this standoff. You know, and I think a lot of people don't realize how critical Alaska issues really were in those vetoes in that fight.
Oh, absolutely. There normally were some Alaska issues among the very last things to be resolved before there could be an agreement on an omnibus appropriations bill or on individual appropriations bills. And I remember many times standing with other reporters outside of S-128, which is the office of the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, because there's a big conference room there. It's an old naval affairs hearing room, very ornate with these very fat, angelic looking figures and boats and ships and anchors and all sorts of things. I remember one time, I think it was actually before Stevens was chairman, but he was a very key member of the committee, and you could hear muffled screaming and yelling inside of there because I think he was really torqued at Leon Panetta or whoever it was from the Clinton administration. He really wanted something, and you could hear this inside of the room, and it was quite funny.
That's a pretty good imitation there.
Yeah.
Joel Southern doing his imitation of Ted Stevens behind closed doors. Yeah, well, it's great to have you with us from Denmark. KPRN's Joel Southern is with us. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422, email talk@APRN.org. And we're, as everyone else in Alaska is looking back on Ted Stevens. Now that his life has come to an end, we can maybe get some grasp on the enormous influence he had on the state of Alaska. Joel, before I turn to my other guest, two notes of interest that you may or may not know. First is that Dan Rostenkowski just died.
Right.
And second is that who should give the tribute on the Senate floor but Chuck Schumer today?
Yeah, I'm not sure that Chuck Schumer was Stevens' most favorite other colleague at times, but...
Stevens blamed Schumer for his election defeat more than his being convicted.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's what goes around comes around, and there are these ironies. I think also, Steve, if I've read correctly, that there is a time and date set for Stevens' funeral next week.
Yeah, there is. They're going to use the Baptist Temple to get so many people in, and the entire U.S. Senate is invited. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes up, and we're trying to make broadcast arrangements for that because I think a lot of the stations and places in the state would be interested in how that comes out. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking with Joel Southern, formerly Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief of the Alaska Public Radio Network. And joining us across the desk from me is Professor Emeritus of History, Stephen Haycock. It's the first time I got to say that.
Well, it does sound a little weird, doesn't it? My colleague Will Jacobs reminded me of Rupert Murdoch the other day, who fired one of his editors, and the editor was named Editor Emeritus as a way to get him out. And the guy went to Murdoch and said, "Well, I want to know what does this mean? What do I get to do?" And Murdoch said, "Well, the E stands for exit. Then the merit means that you deserved it."
Well, that's not really what it is, actually, in the professor world, though. As I understand it, it's quite the honor.
It's a great honor, and I'm very humbled by it. It's a way of conferring recognition of a career, and it's very humbling.
Yeah, and kicking you upstairs so you don't have to do so many classes if you don't want to.
Well, that's very true. Actually, emeritus is usually given to people who have completely retired from the system. I didn't quite get out of town fast enough, so they hired me back half-time for a couple of years to work on a special project, 49 State Fellows Program.
Well, good. And you've been doing that.
Yes, I have indeed.
Go ahead and tell us.
It's a small program in the UAA Honors College. It's a four-year liberal arts and leadership preparation program for talented students who are willing to make an extra commitment. And I think really gives them more of a traditional education. They read classic literature. They learn to close read. We spend a lot of time working with them on their writing. There's a lot of co-curricular activities that give them an opportunity to meet state leaders and even national leaders. There's some travel involved. So it's really quite a wonderful program for those students who are willing to take it on.
Well, Professor Steve Haycox, we called you in to talk about Senator Ted Stevens, and for an historian, that's got to be a large order.
Well, Lisa Murkowski said the other day that no one is more important in Alaska history than Ted Stevens, and I think a very good case could be made for that. In talking with Sean Cockrum over at the Daily News the other day, I said that he's certainly the equal of James Wickersham and Sheldon Jackson and Bob Bartlett, who perhaps played critical roles in shaping Alaska. Probably no one shaped modern Alaska more than Ted Stevens. He was involved in the Statehood Act. He'd been active, as you suggested a moment ago, before that. He played a very critical role after statehood in advising Native leaders across the new state how to protest the land transfers that the Bureau of Land Management was approving for the state's 104 million acre entitlement. That took quite a bit of education for helping natives understand what the implications were, because they didn't have the information. Nobody had bothered to communicate it to them well, and then showing them what to do. Later, of course, he was central to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and of course, you can't imagine the Alaska Lands Act, ANILCA, without Ted Stevens being in there. Working so hard to try to protect his vision of Alaska and the vision that I suppose most people in Alaska shared with him.
I'm trying to figure out where Stevens was when the Udall land freeze hit.
Well, he was
already in the Senate.
He didn't go to the Senate until 1968.
Right.
And the land freeze was in two steps, 65 and 66.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so just before his appointment, he had run unsuccessfully for the Senate, so he was in private practice at that time in Fairbanks.
So the it's interesting you say that. The reason that Udall did that land freeze was because the Native claims weren't settled.
Well, I think people don't quite appreciate the conflict that was written into the Statehood Act. It wasn't understood to be a conflict by very many people when it was written in. But Section 4, as you well know, and most of our listeners probably do, is a disclaimer. The people of Alaska disclaim any right or title to the land that might be subject to Native title. Section 6 of the Statehood Act is the entitlement of the state to choose 104 million acres of Alaska's 375 from the unreserved and unoccupied land in Alaska. Well, when that was written, nobody imagined that the courts of the United States would accord native title in any great amount. People were thinking in terms of, well, there'll be some protective buffers around the villages, and the natives will get title of the villages, and that'll take care of it, and that's all they need. So, but what people had not understood was that there had been a long campaign by Indian rights attorneys in the United States, led by Felix Cohen, above all, who was Associate Solicitor of the Interior Department, which partly culminated in a Supreme Court case in 1941, in which the Supreme Court of the United States found for the validity of something called Aboriginal title. What was Aboriginal title? That's title to land that natives hold, to any land that they may have ever utilized and occupied, whether they continue to utilize and occupy it or not. Well, there'd never been any treaties with Alaska Native people. So potentially about 320 million of Alaska's 175 million acres were subject to Native title. So when the state began to make its selections, which it did on January the 3rd, 1959, Natives began to protest on the grounds of Section 4 of the Statehood Act. No, you can't select that because it might be subject to Native title. And a Bureau of Land Management was sort of thinking in the 1950s way that everybody was, well, we're not going to pay much attention to this. And so they went ahead and started granting title to the state of this land the state selected. And Natives began to protest more and more, and Ted Stevens really helped them a great deal there. Till finally, by 1965, there were so much Native protests that there were many overlapping protests, and almost all the land in Alaska was under some kind of protest to figure out, well, who really has title here? Well, that's stopping economic development. Nothing could go forward because nobody's going to invest anything in land to which they may not have clear title. And so that's when the secretary stepped in and said, in the interest of justice and in the interest of Alaska's future, we have to solve this problem. So he halted any further conveyances of title from the federal government of territorial land to the state of Alaska until such time as the claims problem should be solved.
So then the very same Ted Stevens ends up being in the U.S. Senate when it's time to do the Native Claims Settlement Act.
Well, And when that act passed in December of 1971, one of the first things that Ted Stevens said was that Alaskans should recognize this was an economic development bill. In other words, we had to solve the title issue so that economic development could go forward in Alaska. And of course, the piece of that that wasn't settled because it was so complicated and people couldn't quite figure out how to get their arms around it was, what about conservation? And it was clear to everyone, particularly in the midst of the environmental movement, the timing of the Claim Settlement Act is just very, very interesting, that there were going to be federal conservation withdrawals in Alaska. And that was the last piece of land disposal for Alaska.
So here we have, I guess we got to say, kind of a colossus in Alaska history, because then we go on to the Lands Act, and it just keeps going, really.
Indeed. Well, I think Joel is quite right to suggest that after these issues were completed, statehood, Native claims, conservation withdrawals, then Ted Stevens and everybody else could focus on, now, how do we develop Alaska? And that's when he came on to the became a power on the Appropriations Committee and eventually its chair. There are a lot of things about that. I think we might start with Ted Stevens' view of what Alaska was. I mean, he came up here in the 1950s and he became captivated by the idea of, let's develop Alaska. And he was a real Turnerian in that sense. Frederick Jackson Turner, the historian who talked about the significance of the frontier in American history, his notion of what was best for Alaska was any economic development that for which there was any kind of potential. And I don't think he ever changed his view. That was his notion. And I think that's the notion of most people in Alaska. The whole notion that, what are we doing here? Well, we are building a society. Well, what does that mean, building a society? Well, it means development. It means economic development. It means providing jobs. It means providing infrastructure. It means providing all of the accoutrements of modern civilization that make life possible as we know it and insist that it be. And And not everybody shared that view of Alaska. J. Hammond didn't share that view of Alaska at all, for example. And J. Hammond was a critic of statehood. He opposed statehood on the grounds that it would bring in whole lots of people and lots of economic development and would change the character of Alaska. So Ted Stevens' view, I think, was the view shared by most Alaskans most of the time. But I think we should recognize that it was a particular view. And he was incredibly successful in pursuing that view.
Oh, baby. Yeah, Joel Southern, I wonder if there was any time you ever heard a friendly reference by Senator Stevens in your many, many contacts with him towards, let's say, the Northern Alaska Environmental Center, Southeast Alaska Conservation, what is it? Whatever. But both were homegrown environmental organizations, but for Ted Stevens, were they ever anything but outside environmental agitators?
I think the only nice thing I heard him say about a conservation group were the little garden club ladies that encouraged him to, as solicitor of the Interior Department, to set off the Arctic Range. But then it all sort of went to pots after that, because, of course, that's when the real big fighting started. Of course, when they got into the debate over the Lands Act, and he had a particular, as Steve Haycock said, I mean, he had a particular notion about what ought to happen in places like the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge or the range at the time, so he didn't have many very nice words at all to say about conservation groups, because he was normally locking horns with them pretty strongly.
Well, do you think it was just a rhetorical device, him saying outside environmental groups? I mean, he must have known that some of these were totally homegrown environmental movements. Certainly Celia Hunter is going to stand right up there next to Ted when it comes to statehood.
Oh, absolutely. I think he always thought that there was a strong hand of outside of Alaska groups that were, you know, sort of, yeah, funding and driving and pushing, and people he thought didn't have a real feel for his notion of Alaska. You know?
Yeah, so in other words, he was choosing to define them as outside, even though he sort of knew they weren't.
Well, choosing becomes, at some point, it becomes what you think. You know, I mean, if you dwell in a certain sort of rhetoric, you know, eventually that's your rhetoric, you know. So I think he really felt that at a gut level. You know?
Right. Well, I don't know about you, Joel, but I always felt a little scared of him. I mean, you had to deal with him on a day-to-day basis, and I'd see him, you know, maybe once every couple of months. Sometimes
right.
He would do a talk of Alaska. And I felt when push came to shove, he was going to be the shover. You know, that I wasn't going to contradict him when he talked about tapping the electrojet or talked about net neutrality had nothing to do with common carriers, and I just didn't understand that it was all a great big series of tubes. You know, I didn't stand a chance, you know, and I didn't want to mix it up with him, even though I thought I was right and he was wrong. You know what I mean? Would you?
Well, I'd share with you that when I first started dealing with him, there was an element of sort of fear about it, because I'll be blunt. He was a real royal pain in the rear end to deal with sometimes from a reporter's perspective. But I found that over time, if you tried to understand where he was coming from, and if you were fair to him, then he respected that, and he understood, you know, what you were doing and what he was doing. There were times that he froze me out and froze others out, sometimes for having the gall to report what he said. You know, I'd have one example of that. I mean, back during the fighting over the what to do in the aftermath of the long-term timber contracts in Southeast, he and Frank Murkowski were trying to think of all sorts of ideas of trying to shift a lot of the federal government presence down southward in Southeast Alaska, away from Juneau down to Ketchikan. They were talking about moving the Forest Service headquarters down there. At one point, he came up with the idea of moving the Coast Guard headquarters down there, the Coast Guard administrative functions. Of course, he had a little bee in his bonnet about the Juneau area officialdom, because he thought they were anti-timber harvesting. So anyway, David Whitney and I, former ADN and McClatchy reporter, one day were talking to him after a hearing, And we heard him make a mention about this, you know, moving the Coast Guard administrative functions, you know, out of Juneau. So I recorded the interview. I thought, this is very interesting. I called, I think it was John Greeley at the time, news director at KTOO, and said, hey, John, you got some interesting comments here from Stevens. You want to hear them? He said, yeah, sure. And so he gets them and listens to them and starts talking to the Juneau officials about it, and they get all up in arms and start screaming and yelling at Stevens down in Washington. So Stevens laid low for a bit after that with me, and one day I caught him at another thing, and finally he was ready to talk, and he walked up to me, and he pointed at my microphone. He said, that thing gets me into trouble. And I was standing there thinking to myself, no, Senator, that thing under your nose got you into trouble. I didn't get you into trouble. I was doing my job, you know.
Yeah, thanks. It's Joel Southern, former bureau head in Washington, D.C. for the Alaska Public Radio Network, covering Senator Ted Stevens for a good 20 years. And we're open for your calls here at Talk of Alaska. We're talking about Ted Stevens and his legacy and the measure of the man. And I think one thing we will end up all of us saying about him is that he was unselfish. He was there to serve Alaska. It was his vision of Alaska, but he was there to serve Alaska. It was not about Ted Stevens. But maybe you'll disagree. I don't know. 1-800-478-8255. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at APRN.org. Along with Joel Sutton, we have Professor Stephen Haycox, a professor emeritus of history at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. And we'll start with, oh, we lost our caller? Okay. Oh, that's great. Well, in that case, from Stephen Wasilla, although I rarely agreed with Ted Stevens politically and never voted for him, I had a great deal of respect for the man. He always placed the interests of Alaska ahead of everything else. I also believe the legal problems he dealt with at the end of his career were substantially overblown. Thanks to Senator Stevens, my son had a priceless experience as an intern in Washington, D.C., and for that our family has been very grateful. And I think, you know, there are probably, that could probably be replicated easily thousands of times. You know, Steve Haycox, in your dealings with Ted Stevens personally, how did you find him?
I didn't come to his purview until I started writing a commentary and doing commentary on KSKA radio back in the early 80s. And then I wrote several books about Alaska, and he took umbrage at some of the things that I said.
I would reckon so.
Well, that's all right. He was always very fair always very clear about what he thought and willing to talk. And I had a number of conversations with him. He was extremely helpful to this little program that I described earlier. He helped us fund it. And whenever we went to Washington with our students, he was exceedingly gracious. He hosted us in the ornate Senate pro tem office, which is a lovely room. Like many Alaskans, like the emailer from Wasilla, I didn't vote for Ted Stevens, and I didn't agree with much of his. He was a good Republican soldier. He was fortunate to be on appropriations when his party had control of the Congress and there was a lot of money flowing. But he was dedicated to Alaska. And people said the same thing of Wally Hickel, another person with whom I didn't always agree. But I respected both of them immensely. They were totally dedicated to their notion of what they thought Alaska should be, and I thought that they were always above board in explaining that.
Joel, we talked to someone you'll remember, Connie Godwin. And she said, you know, when you look into it, you'll find that just about everybody on that plane was a former Stevens staffer. And she said, I think you can go up and down the line of people that work for him, and you won't hear a bad thing about him ever. And didn't you kind of find that there was a sort of intense loyalty in the Stevens shop, including amongst the people who no longer worked for him?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've seen a lot of comments on the Facebook the last couple of days of former staffers I knew there, and almost to a person, they were very grateful, very thankful for the experience they had. Stevens is a mentor. I mean, he could be gruff and growly, but I can give you a personal example of something. I wasn't a staffer, but of a personal kindness, of a generosity to me. I had a brother who died of a very pernicious cancer in 1995. And one day I came home, and there was a letter in the mail on Stevens's letterhead. I'll read it to you. I have it here right in front of me. It says, Dear Joel, Mitch Rose, told me about your brother. My older brother died of cancer of the pancreas almost 20 years ago. It's a tough reaction, hard to deal with, and it means you should start thinking about cancer yourself. In my case, as you know, it was prostate cancer that caught up with me, but I did catch it because I know my risk was higher because of the family history. So, my friend, I share your grief. You should read up on grief. It is something we must all realize is a potent force in human psychology. And, I mean, that was not necessarily profound to other people. It was very profound to me at the time. I was very appreciative that he did something like that.
And you know, it's that's totally personal, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's just one guy to another guy. Hey, man, I got this prostate cancer. Yeah, I've had to deal with.
Yeah. It's a handwritten note, and I've kept it all these years, and you know, and I knew what the subtext was there too, because this was a man who did, you know, actually as part of the process of trying to get Anilka together. He went through some serious grief when the Learjet crash happened in Anchorage in 1978, and his first wife Anne was killed in it, and he was seriously injured, and some others were killed and injured. And you know, there's some. It's not written into this card, but I can sort of see it between the lines, you know, and it meant a lot. Still does.
Yeah.
Still means a lot.
Absolutely. We're talking about Ted Stevens, who's no longer with us, but he certainly left an awful lot of stuff behind. As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
Steve Haycox and Joel Southern are with us, and we're talking about Senator Ted Stevens. Joel Southern would sometimes sit with me. He'd be in Washington, D.C., sitting with Senator Stevens, and I would be here in Anchorage hosting the Talk of Alaska program, so Joel would sometimes have to be the interpreter for me, for Stevens, and for the callers. And I'm sure that was kind of an interesting exercise at times. Steve Haycox is Professor Emeritus of History at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. And, you know, we all knew Ted Stevens, and we're interested in talking with you about Ted Stevens as well on Talk of Alaska, sharing thoughts statewide. We've lost a monument in state history, and for people new to the state, it's probably hard to understand just exactly how hard this hits us all. This from by email from Diana Gish, who used to work at KBRW in Barrow. She was in the news department. She says, one night he arrived at night in Barrow after attending the funeral of a fellow congressman in Washington. He looked tired, and I asked him if he would prefer to do our scheduled interview the next morning instead, and he seemed appreciative. We met the following morning at Pepe's restaurant. It was then that I had a chance to observe how very polite and considerate he was with the waitress, Tess. He treated her with the same amount of respect that he gave high-ranking officials. He looked her in the eye and expressed appreciation for a coffee refill. It was flirtatious, or patronizing, or put on, but respectful. I may not have agreed with his views on many things, but that day I gained a great respect for the character of the man. When I moved back to Kansas, I was very surprised to discover that most places aren't able to offer the health care to natives that Alaska does. It was quite a shock, and it was because Kansas and the rest of the country didn't have an Uncle Ted. Thanks for giving me a chance to share these things. Joel, maybe we can springboard off of that to the issue of the Native hospital here, because there was a huge exercise of Senator Stevens' clout. Basically, that soaked up all the money for Indian Health Service construction for, what, a whole year and for the whole country, right?
Multiple years. It wasn't just 1 year. It took a long time to get all the resources together to build the new hospital. That was something that they really banged on the Indian Health Service and the various administrations for a long time.
But he had to, my point is, he had to put himself crosswise with all the tribal politics and probably some in the Indian Health Service to get this thing through, because there just wasn't enough money for anywhere near all the construction.
Oh, yeah, and also other appropriators and other members of Congress who had large Native constituencies that wanted a piece of the Indian Health Service money. I mean, he was that was definitely an issue where he was quite dogged, and, you know, it's not necessarily an easy thing to deal with the Indian Health Service, too, because over the time it's had a lot of dysfunction, and it was not an easy process. And, you know, when I have been in Anchorage and seen that, it was interesting to see, after all the years of talking about it, to the hospital finally go up and the services that it can provide.
Joel, we're joined by public broadcaster Rich McClear, who is doing public broadcasting in Serbia right now, and joins us by Skype, a first ever Skype call. Rich, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing just great. You're sounding fairly loud and clear. And you know, I know that you had some extensive exposure to Senator Stevens, including watching him fight for public broadcasting. And I wanted to get you to tell that.
Well, on three separate occasions, Ted Stevens really pulled our bacon out of the fire. Once during the Reagan administration, when they wanted to cut public broadcasting, Stevens teamed up with Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, and they got a supplemental appropriation that really saved the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and was able to keep services going. Then several times he worked with Fritz Hollings across the line to try and get us money when Republicans from his own party wanted to cut it. And then finally, in the Gingrich years, after I left as the APRN board was working at Coast Alaska, there was an attempt to zero public broadcasting. And Senator Stevens continuously worked to try and save public broadcasting and was able to bring enough Republicans along to do that, to make sure that we weren't badly cut. And then, of course, made sure that CPB wrote the regulations so that stations that had sole service, served small population areas, or had minority-controlled boards of directors, as a lot of Alaska APRN stations did, weren't cut out even if they fell below minimum standards for Corporation Public Broadcasting funding. So I think without Ted Stevens, we might well not have public broadcasting in the United States as we know it.
Wow. When was the first time you actually ran across this guy? Were you in Minnesota or Juneau, or where were you?
I was at K2 in Juneau. I was manager of K2 Radio in Juneau. And I had just come from Minnesota, and I was this Chichaco manager. And I had my view of Senator Stevens as kind of this cardboard cutout conservative. Of course, coming from an environmentalist background, I didn't much like him. And I was there about 3 weeks, and I got a call. And the person on the desk said, Rich, Phyllis Schlafly wants to talk to you. And I said, what? And she said, well, she wanted to talk to Charlie Northrup, but Charlie didn't want to talk to her, so we forwarded her to you. And so I get on the phone, and there's Phyllis Schlafly, who was a conservative women's leader who was very active in the pro-life movement and opposing the Equal Rights Amendment. And she was calling me to tell me that Stevens had marched in a pro-ERA march in Washington, and it was supporting women's right to choose, and that the good conservative people of Alaska ought to know about this. They might not think so highly of their Senator Ted Stevens. Well, I'm thinking, I'm at Chichaco, but I've been in Juneau long enough to know that this isn't going to hurt Stevens in Juneau at all.
Especially in Juneau.
I get a hold of the news director, Jim Gordon, and said, Jim, get on the line here. I said, Jim's listening, and we're both kind of chuckling. And Stevens came through the next day or so, and I met Stevens for the first time. And then Jim did an interview with him and asked him about the ERA and asked him about his pro-choice stance. He was very forthright about it. And, of course, the reaction to the callers in Juneau was quite supportive of what the senator was saying. So that's when I learned that he wasn't exactly what I expected, that there were a lot of different dimensions to him. And that was my first experience with Ted Stevens, introduced by Phyllis Schlafly, of all people.
Yeah. Rich McClure, thanks for joining us from Serbia.
My pleasure. Take care, Steve.
All right. Steve Haycox, maybe we could just dip briefly into that because Title IX comes to mind. I mean, it seems that Ted Stevens has been pretty staunch on certain things that are generally thought to be liberal causes. And maybe, you know, the right has drifted further to right than it used to be. But as far as I know, his entire life he stuck to his guns about women's rights, about choice, about the National Endowment for the Arts, about public broadcasting.
Absolutely. He was not a cardboard conservative cutout in any way, shape, or form. He was a good Republican soldier politically, but he knew what his issues were. He knew where he stood, and he defended them on the floor of the Senate and in the federal government. And he wasn't too worried about where the chips might fall in Alaska, because he always explained his view, I think, above board and forthrightly. People knew where he stood, and they knew that he was dedicated to Alaska. And so I think they, if the term is right, forgave him views that they might not have agreed with. I think that the calls that have come this morning and the letters to the editor and the ADN are very reflective of that. Many of them say, I'm not a person who voted for Ted Stevens, but I respected him greatly for his dedication to Alaska and all of the things that he did for Alaskans. I think that's a very pervasive view in Alaska. In regard to the corruption trial, I think that he rebounded from that. There were a few months when he was kind of out of sight, but he rebounded fairly quickly from that. And I think that Alaskans, along with him, took a pretty pragmatic view. He's been described as a lawyer's lawyer. He was prepared to lose. He knew what losing was all about. And so he closed that chapter and said, okay, now let's get on with what the rest of it is. And I think Alaskans looked at it that way. I don't think the corruption business is going to play in his legacy very much at all.
Wow. Well, I know that what he said in here, which was just really prior to the trial, he said, look, it's a matter of faith for me. I don't even look at the idea that I'd be convict. I can't look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the way he said it stuck with me. Joel Southern in Washington, D.C., maybe you can think back to...
Not in Washington, D.C. anymore.
I know, but in your years in Washington, D.C., this business of, you know, was there a low point for Stevens that you can recall where you thought, well, man, this guy has just really taken a shot?
Not really. I mean, I think there was a letdown after he left the chairmanship of the Appropriations Committee somewhat, although, you know, again, he went on to Commerce, and of course, one of the big namesake laws that's important to Alaska is the province of the Commerce Committee. That's the Magnuson-Stevens Fisheries Act. So he had more to do there. He had more to do in telecommunications, and, you know, ironically, he wanted to do a lot more and try to do a lot more in terms of aviation safety, et cetera. We can't fail to note that, given what's happened here. If he wanted to do anything, I think, in the transportation realm, it was to make sure that people flying back and forth, general aviation, commercial, whatever, could do it more safely. I mean, you have these monumental fights with budget hawks over the years about the Essential Air Service program. He was always trying to agitate for more funding for lights and other safety measures at small airstrips. So, you know, he was able to do that both in the authorizing committees and as continuing as an appropriator. So, I don't know. One thing I think is sort of interesting, and that is, in a way, the longer he stayed in the Senate, a little more lonelier he became, and from the standpoint that he seemed to be someone who really relished his years with the other lawmakers of the World War II generation. I know I talked to him a few times in, you know, the years just before I left there, and he was starting to feel a little isolated, somewhat, from the standpoint that there was a new generation of senators coming in. Some of them, actually, from the Contract with America class, had been through the House and they went on to the Senate, and he was starting to feel that, you know, maybe I can't identify with these guys so much, just from an age standpoint, and also because they were much more ardently conservative. You know, he did try to work across the aisle, not every last issue, but we all know about his friendship with Danny Inouye, and he also worked well with Democrats again of his own generation. And I think he missed that as time went along, because he felt there was a loss of, you know, trying to find a common interest for the country.
This note is kind of a counterpoint to that. Ron and Seward, in numerous visits over several years advocating for local projects, I gathered lots of memories of Senator Stevens. The one that may best capture the depth and breadth of what it meant to be Ted Stevens was sitting in his Capitol office, watching him with a BlackBerry in his hand and another beeping on in the desk. An essential 20th century man in a 19th century building with a thorough mastery of 21st century technology, putting it all together to help a kid back home. We will miss him.
Oh, that's absolutely correct. I mean, you really had to work hard sometimes to keep up with this guy. He might have been sort of an old guy in some people's minds, but he was hard to keep up with physically sometimes, because he really scooted around the Capitol. But it was right. That's absolutely right. He was working BlackBerries. He used internet and email quite a lot. He was very interested in knowing the latest about telecommunications technology, particularly how it could be adapted to the needs in Alaska. So he really did. He might have had trouble with some of the newer generation of senators, but not with the newer generations of communications technology.
I always thought it was interesting that he was a huge proponent of telecommuting. He was. There were basically, the bureaucracy doesn't want to do it, and he like would force the bureaucracy to allow more telecommuting by federal employees, because he just thought it made sense. It didn't cost as much, and you know, I think he you know, as long as he would have stayed there, he would have kept pushing that.
Oh yeah,
everybody comments on his physical capability. I live in South Addition, and. Every once in a while, when he was in the Senate, he would show up at Bill Bittner's house, and Bill has a tennis court down below his house. And Stevens played tennis all the time, and he was very, very, very aggressive. It was a lot of fun in that neighborhood, because when he would show up for a day or two, lots of folks would come to visit. They'd put out the call and say he was available, and folks would come, and the whole neighborhood would fill up with cars, and you couldn't park anywhere. And we used to call those Ted sightings. My friend Diane Moxness coined that term. I wanted to say something about his relationship with Native Alaskans. Don Mitchell reminded me of this. Don was longtime general counsel at AFN. And Stevens didn't support Native sovereignty. He felt that there's too much paternalism associated with Native sovereignty, and that its history is not good. And he didn't accept the argument that Native sovereignty had ever been intended for Alaska Natives. And this led to some fairly difficult times. He was called a racist publicly at the 2003 AFN convention because of his advocacy of not tribal recognition, but regional groups being recognized as the effective unit to deal with Native issues. I think he transcended that. He was a steadfast advocate for Alaska Native causes and Alaska Native people, as I suggested earlier, going clear back to the days right after statehood. So I think he was able to rise above those kinds of things and maintain his equilibrium. He was quite remarkable in that way.
Fascinating. Sue joins the program from Wrangell, but first let's take our break as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company,
If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
The subject is Senator Ted Stevens, the late Senator Ted Stevens. I can't get my mind around it. I could never imagine him not being a senator. Now he's not with us anymore. I'm Steve Heimel. This is Talk of Alaska, and that's our subject. It was originally going to be election, but basically election activities, campaigning, has been suspended for at least a few days. Let's go to Sue in Wrangell. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Sue.
Good morning, and I really love Ted Stevens, and he was meant a lot to many people. And, well, I'm Alaska Native, and I'm from Wrangell, and we used to own a seine boat when I was about 24 years old, and it was brand new, it was beautiful, and it got burnt to the water line about 4 months after we bought it. And I got a letter in the mail, my husband and me, and Ted Stevens said he had a daughter named Sue Stevens also, and that he would do anything that he could to help us. And so when he got in trouble and they were saying he didn't care about Alaska fishermen until recently, I really disagreed with that. And my husband now, Steve, and I got to see him in Metlakatla on Founders Day in 2007 when they founded when they dedicated that Army Corps Engineers Road. And he's so powerful and humble, and it was so dynamic. And we miss him. Thank you.
All right, Sue. Thanks for sharing that memory with us. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about Ted Stevens. I'll throw in one memory I'll always have, which is when he would have his news conferences. It would often be just before he left for D.C. or just when he arrived from D.C. And the press corps would all turn out. And, we go to that office in the federal building. And we'd all be waiting for him. His staff would make sure we were all there. And we usually had to wait for one particular television station. And then once we were all assembled, he would come marching in. And he'd still be putting his tie on. I would always remember him, for some reason, tying his necktie while he's talking to us.
I wanted to make one comment. You suggested it's hard to get your mind around the late Ted Stevens, and I think that's quite profound, really. I mean, there's a psychology at work here now. In a very real sense, he was the great father for Alaska. I mean, he was the presence who was always in the background when you were talking about Alaska and where it is and what its future is. And now that presence is gone. Even if he wasn't the subject of the debate or the conversation, that presence was always sort of lurking back there. And you thought, well, Ted is there, and he'll take care of things, or he'll try. That's gone now. We don't have that now. And Wally Hickel is gone, and Elmer Rasmussen is gone, and Bob Atwood is gone, and Bob Bartlett is gone. So I think that this departure of Ted Stevens really is, in a sense, a closing of an era. And I think that Alaskans now are going to have to rethink, well, what is Alaska? What does it mean to be an Alaskan? Where does Alaska go, and how does Alaska go? I think the landscape changes as a result of this event, really.
Joel Southern, you're not here in Alaska. You're all the way over in Denmark right now, but I would imagine that you'd think similarly to Professor Haycox here.
Well, I think even as the Alaska delegation reached its pinnacle of power, there was lurking in the background the whole notion that they were getting older too, and everything could just sort of fall off the cliff, after this moment of glory when Stevens and Frank Murkowski and Don Young all had their chairmanships. And in a good way, in a positive way, I think it was good that there was a generational shift that started in the congressional delegation, because you've got to work in new people. You've got to bring in some fresh ideas and some fresh energy. And you have two new senators now, Congressman Young. We'll have to see what happens out into the future with him, in the election and out beyond. But it was inevitable that one day it was all going to change. You know, I could have wished for a more peaceful ending for Ted Stevens, given all that had happened, but it was going to happen someday, and it just so happened that it was Monday of this week.
You know, it occurs to me now that some of the stuff that he was doing was preparing us for his absence. The call for regionalization, he pretty well said it at the AFN. He says, look, I'm just not going to be able to fight for this money for you. You got to find a way somehow to assure that that you actually going to have that conduit when I'm not here. I mean, he pretty much said that. And we saw that, I think, in a few other things, you know, where he did try and prepare for this eventuality.
It's also going to be a monumental task for whoever is there in the delegation in the future. You know, you don't prejudge elections before they happen. But whoever ends up representing Alaska in Congress is going to have a huge hill to climb, a Sisyphean task here, because of the deficits and the debt, and you're just not going to have the free flow of money out there. Not that it was real free before, but there was a freer flow of money. And you know, some of what Ted Stevens did in the past is going to be very hard to sustain in the future.
Yeah,
and some's going to drop by the wayside for sure.
Pam in Anchorage, sorry we held up so long. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Pam in Anchorage, you still with us? Well, that simplifies things. Let's try Rhonda. Joins the program from Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Rhonda. Quickly, though.
Good morning. Hi. Okay, quickly. I'm going to be the politically incorrect one here. I'm sorry. Ted Stevens, I'm sure, did a lot of good things for Alaska, but one thing he did do, I keep hearing about him positively reflected in the fisheries policies that our state and country are now under. And it's because of him that we have privatized fisheries for halibut, sablefish, pollock, and crab.
IFQs and processor quotas. Yeah, I understand.
Not anymore.
Yeah, thank you. Joel Southern, did you actually had to stake out that office sometimes when they were putting together the last provisions for processor quotas, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, and it was very complex and very hard to understand, but I know a lot of people were very angry about the result of it. And, you know, I wish I was more of an expert in that area and understood it better. It confused me then, and it confuses me now. But I know a lot of people feel very, very passionately about the end product of that and what the impact has been.
Yeah, well, Joel, I want to thank you very much for helping us through this.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having.
All right. And Professor Steve Haycox, you get the last word if it's only 30 seconds.
Well, it's a powerful legacy. As Lisa Murkowski said, nobody's more important to Alaska than Ted Stevens. I think that probably most Alaskans understand that he probably had more to do with shaping modern Alaska than anyone, and he won't be forgotten.
I think so. Well, thank you very much for listening. Kristen Spack on the controls, Josh Edds on the phones, and I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. If you smoke, odds are you want to quit. And if you want to quit, you're probably finding it tough to do. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. The average smoker tries 10 times before they quit for good. You can increase your chances by calling the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. Give it a shot. It's free and it works. Call the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line at 1-888-842-7848. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.